Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. And it's a long weekend, King's Birthday weekend. So just before we go any further, as before we start off with AJ, or he starts on me, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West, opposite the iconic Civic Theatre. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap. They have a selection of bottle beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food and music. Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09-377-3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, it is King's Birthday weekend, and I have no doubt that my name will not be in the honours this year, and neither will his name, even though his lovely wife, Nikki, who's put up for so many years, deserves to be in it. Morning, AJ Wheaton.
Good morning, Peggy, and yes, King's Birthday weekend, a long weekend, and I know Mrs. Wheaton will be enjoying my company for an additional 24 hours. It'll be it's like a present for her already, so yeah.
You are so full of it, mate.
Well, that's why I'm inside and she's outside somewhere. So
Yeah, you're hiding, mate. Once she hears this, mate, you are in big crap, mate. That's
anyway,
it.
Anyway, I hope all the small people have a lovely weekend, a long weekend. Extra lion, they'll need it.
Yeah, okay. Here we go. It's already starting. Anyway, we might as well kick it off. Crusaders 47, Hurricanes 14. There's not much we can really read into this game. The Hurricanes rested 13 players. Crusaders rested a number of players. Sever Reef's 100th game. Two tries and a brilliant sideline conversion. Really impressed with Jamie Hanna. An injury to Fletcher Newell. Concerning not only for Rob Penny, but also for Dave Rennie, and of course, the big announcement: Scott Hanson will be coming in next season for the Crusaders. But your thoughts on the game?
Well, look, it provided what I thought it would. I picked the Crusaders being at home turf. I think they're certainly looking to make it into a fortress, as they say. Good crowd again. It's all going and excitement down there, and it's been displayed on the footy field. She was pretty dominated by the Red and Blacks, territory position-wise, and all of a sudden they've become pretty expensive, and I'm enjoying that type of rugby. They certainly opened up the Hurricanes a few times, and Reece a couple of tries on his 100th match, but I thought the standout players definitely for me were Havili. I think he's just going from strength to strength, and it's not only his leadership, but the way he played, set up a couple of tries. And I thought the Hotham, yes, getting a bit better delivery at halfback. Impressed with him. And I thought Leo Willey had a good game and Tangi at home too. So look, they all stepped up, quite dominant. The stats show it. The scoreline shows it, 47-14. And Mr. Laidlaw obviously looking to rest some players. And the Crusaders, of course, needed the victory to secure, if they can, if the Blues don't turn up this weekend, to have a quarterfinal at home.
Yeah, which would be huge for that stadium as well too, because, you know, when you look at it, they're just going to get another sellout. If they'd had a better start to the season, they may have been looking at a home semi-final, but that's just the way it's been
going. Yeah. No, look, they're playing some good rugby. It was entertaining. Totally dominated you clear your benches, it's all over with 20 or 15 to go, Piggy. And honestly, I didn't even know some of the players coming off the bench.
Well, they probably don't know who you are.
that's probably more to the point. They give them 5 minutes in a room, they'll certainly know my life history. But in the end, it just goes to show where the picture was with Mr. Laidlaw. I mean, yes, a victory, great, but certainly a bigger picture for him. And, of course, the Crusaders took advantage of it.
Absolutely. Then later on in Brisbane, I actually thoroughly enjoyed the game and with the highlights I did see of it. And I have to say, Reds 45, Fiji and Drua 24, Mata Ali, a hat-trick for the Drua, but Gordon had a good game, really led the ship well for the Reds, but that loose forward trio, Harry Wilson, what a player. So, you know, the Reds, they're now secure in the playoff. They don't know who they're playing until the end of this weekend.
Yeah, well, wherever they're playing, it's going to be a Kiwi side. So I think that, you know, whether they travel to Chiefs or Kane, who knows? But in the end, it's going to be a tough one. The game, yeah, quite entertaining. They had to battle a bit. Old Jacko, I think this is his last, or it was his last game as coach. He's moving on. But they made a few errors. The Reds dropped a lot of ball with the line broken. You mentioned the loose forwards, yep. McFadden, Wilson, Uru, I think is a good player. Just his hands let him down, or a few decision making and offloading. McDermott, of course, and Gordon certainly run the cutter. They're very dominant. Passini came off with an injury. Hopefully, it's not too serious. That could affect the rest of the season. You mentioned, you know, Ryan's always dangerous with ball in hand. But they just, did what they had to do. They got on a roll in the second half, the last 20, and put on 20 points and shut the gate on the Drua. So, yeah, the Reds through, obviously through to the top six, but it's going to be an uphill battle when they play their quarter.
And then we go to the weekend's game, starting off in Canberra, the Brumbies versus the Moana Pacifica. Possible last game, even though there's big talk from a former varsity player saying that he might try and save them for a few votes, but you know.
Well, that's...
We don't have to mention who that former varsity player is.
We'll wait and see. Look, all I'll say is that they can, someone can come in, as I said before, someone with really deep pockets and wants to support Pacifica. It's got to be commercially viable. And I can just say, I don't think any taxpayers' money at this stage where we are would be going into professional sport. Anyway, watch the space and sound footing from the start. If it's going to happen, hopefully it is, because it's going to need a lot of money to make sure it survives.
But Brumby's probably too good on this one.
Oh yes, and playing at home, and they'll need some momentum. I see they just made two or three changes, and you've got that Lonergan-Meredith combination, but still keep the same midfield. Has Larkin with Pritchard and Faluai. So, consistency all round. And, of course, Slipper just keeps on going with Ala Latoa. They're both well over centurions and 200 matches. Pretty solid in that front row. So a couple of changes from Tana with Havili back to fullback, which will provide some certainty for them. But, again, you have to think the Brumbies would be too good in 13-plus at home.
And then we got the big one in Hamilton, the Chiefs versus the Blues. The Blues have made a number of changes. Anton Cigna has been chosen as the captain. And as I've always said, this guy will be, when he was signed by the Blues long term, I said, this is the future captain of the franchise. And he's been brought in a bit earlier but than expected. But Blues really are desperate at this stage. They either they lose, they go down to Canterbury. They win, they bring the Cantabrians up to them.
Yeah, there's a lot of incentive there. And I thought earlier in the week I took, the Chiefs, but I see O'Donnell Gibbs has made 7-8 changes. So I think a bit like Mr. Laidlaw, he knows they've secured a home quarter and possibly semi. So quite prepared to throw a bit of caution to the wind. So that's certainly, in my view, gives the Blues a good opportunity. They, in turn, have made a lot of changes from last week. Perifita back at number 10. Obviously, Landon Clark on the wings. We know how exciting they can be. You mentioned Cigna. He's back in captaining because of, obviously, Tua Piloto's out with an injury, and he's had a great season. So he'll lead by example. There's no doubt about that. But a lot of changes with the Chiefs again. Couple of players who's only played one or two matches, Paul at midfield, Verona at centre. Satiti, of course, at eight is playing some good rugby with Finau and Brown. So they got some consistency in the loose forwards, Josh Lord there. A few changes too many for me. That could be a downfall, but I'll stick with the Chiefs, but it could go either way.
Yep, okay, and then the last one, Willa. I don't know. I suppose it's for both of these teams, it's to impress Les Kiss, the Force versus the Waratahs.
Yeah, it's sort of a nothing game, I mean, but as it is, they're both out of the running to the top six, so lose a bit of momentum for me. So Western Force at home, I think they've been consistent enough at home to deserve. They play some good rugby here and there, and they've upset a couple. The Waratahs just haven't performed again. They always look good pre-season. They talk the talk, but haven't delivered. So they go back to the drawing board for 2027. The Force at home. Ah, I like to see them win. Champions of Chrisney playing pretty good rugby there. So, I'll pick the Force to tip up the Tar.
Now, the weekend ahead for Mr. AJ Whetton. Obviously, you wait very much for your for your King's Service Medal to what was it? Rugby, broadcasting, abuse to abuse to smaller people like myself.
There'll be nothing too much going on. I'll catch up with a mate. We might go catch up and have a jar and a friend. That's something that may be lacking your end.
Oh, God.
I shouldn't say that.
You need,
anyway,
you need new material, mate. You definitely need new material.
If you're lost for company, I'll tell you where. I'll text you. And if we're not there, I may have just given you the wrong address. I'll be busy doing a few chores around here and enjoying having that day off on Monday. I think where we are, everybody would like that day off. I hope you do too. I hope you have a good weekend and put your feet up, my friend.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm looking forward to. I really actually enjoy watching. I'll be watching a bit of sports, obviously. A few things I'll be looking at would be the Warriors over the weekend. I'm really looking for, and of course, obviously, we've got the Football World Cup. Now, this is going to cause a few problems in my show, because I'll be on, and of course, as you know, our listener base is, well, who knows, over 100,000.
But I've seen the World Cup football. I mean, even as a sports person, doesn't matter what code you follow, the largest one of the tournaments in the world. So, yeah, it's captivating. And I certainly will be watching some football, because it's some of the best of the best, and that's what you do.
I certainly do, and I've just had a text from just one of our guests, so I've just got to message him during the breaks, not to worry about it. But yeah, you have a good break, AJ, and I've got no doubts we will catch up very, very soon. We've got a whole lot of things happening in rugby, and after these, obviously, Super Rugby playoffs, we've also got Club Rugby back next weekend. And I must admit, as you know, my Saturday always is. I'm up early, I'm preparing the show, because I'm such a professional, as you know. And then what I do is as soon as I leave there, I go back home, then I'm down to Eden Rugby, where I'm just, you know, supporting the team, doing a few rugby club duties, you know.
Yeah, I know. Ball boy on the sideline is one of your duties.
No, I'm far too old for that, and a little bit too tall. Well, actually, the ball boys are taller than me. So I actually am enjoying just chilling this weekend. I'm actually going to get a haircut, because I really need one, so it shows my natural colour, which is grey.
Don't worry.
And those grey hairs started when you became my rugby analyst.
Mate, it's a fashion now is to go blonde like most rugby. I'd love to see you in a blonde. That would make my weekend, I tell you.
But anyway. Well, I tell you what, I was going to say that's a compliment from someone, you know, trying to mow your lawns on your head. It's like mowing lawns on a footpath. On that note, you have a wonderful weekend, and we will catch up again next week. Bye.
Look forward to it, my little friend. Goodbye.
Bye. AJ Whetton. Sorry, guys, the voice is a bit throaty today, so I do apologise. Anyway, we're going to talk about, while there's no Auckland Rugby Union Club Rugby, there is Club Rugby in North Harbour and Counties Manukau. Also, Stephen Harris will also chat to us about the Contenders match between Auckland and Northland. So let's play a bit of music. On the show now, one more take, then I'm on my way. Oh,
to the other side of town. Info on a need to know, keeping on the low now. One more day, then I'm on my way. Trying to make the most of still seeing your face. Don't want to think about it, rather stay in denial. Pretend it ain't a fact, at least for the meanwhile. But for the moment being, we in our own world made me feel like Jay-Z. Must be my dream, girl.
Oh, please don't leave me now. Kiss me till the sun goes down. Please don't leave me now. Kiss me till the sun goes down.
Goes down.
Goes down.
Goes down.
Goes down. Kiss me till the sun goes down. Goes down. Goes down,
goes down.
Kiss me till the sun goes down.
Down, destination abroad, vision the home base. We're heavy in my thoughts. Initiate distraction, match fashion, action. Step on scene, she's double E, makes it happen. I think you're hell of a if it's cool. Holler at a brother for another rendezvous. I'm sending my love and I'ma seal it with a kiss. I ain't never had a love like this.
No tears, that's what I keep saying in my head. Trying to hold it together. Scared I'ma lose you forever and ever.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Hopefully my voice is throat is cleared. I must be having some sort of flu, you know. Oh well, I suppose if you work as hard as me, you're likely to get those. But I will survive because I'm a man of tough character and a lot of BS at the moment. But anyway, before we start off on our regional club rugby wrap, this was brought to you by Force Electrical. Force Electrical was started in 2014 by my good mate Nick Brakovich and has grown into a trusted name across the wider region. Now, choosing them, it's reliability and knowledge that sets them apart. They stay ahead of the latest industry standards and technology. What they do? Well, what can't they do? They can do anything from residential and commercial projects, ongoing electrical maintenance, solar panel systems with inverters and battery storage, and ELV solutions. So, if you're wanting any electrical work done around the house, at the factory, at the office, give Nick a call. His number is 021-628-341, or you can email Nick at forceelectrical.co.nz. Well, no Auckland Club Rugby, no Northland Club Rugby, and so we've had there's still a lot of things to talk about when we talk about club rugby, because it is the backbone of New Zealand. And the backbone, and you've also got to have a big backbone and we've got a man who does well in what he does. He knows club rugby inside and out across the region, and an absolutely top bloke, Stephen Harris. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Eamon. Always a privilege and a pleasure. Never a chore.
Oh, mate, I love that. I love that. When you come on here, you say that. And as you know, Stephen, I'm a very, I haven't got an ego at all. As you know, I know you're laughing, yeah. But in all honesty, it's always good having you on. Obviously, no Auckland and Northland Club Rugby, so we're going to go across the bridge, we're going to do a lesser travel, and we're going to talk about North Harbour Rugby. So these are the games for North Harbour. Maharangi versus East Coast Bays, Helensville versus Massey, Silverdale versus Northcote, and Cumu versus Takapuna. So that first one, Maharangi versus East Coast Bays really competing with the big two, which are on the shore, which are North Shore and Takapuna. And Massey as well.
Very much so, East Coast Bays. Now, there's only four rounds to go, counting today's rounds, and of course the cutoff for the top four at the moment is 30 points. East Coast Bays sitting on 30 points, Northcote on 24. So it's important that East Coast Bays to stay in contact or stay in that four, carry on their winning way, and even though they've got to travel to Maharangi today, I'm expecting them to get the job done, and that'll keep them firmly ensconced in their fourth place.
Absolutely. And then we go to the next match, which is Helensville versus Massey. Now, Massey have been going great guns, mate. So they've been going excellent. So, obviously, Helensville, you know, really, they're battering above, they're basically punching above their weight. They haven't defaulted. Yep. They've kept it going. They've got a good spirit there, but I just see Massey's just too good there.
Yeah, got to agree with that. Massey sitting in third place on 37 points. I personally think that's where they'll probably end up in the comp. Of course, North Shore, the team with the bye today, but I don't think they could be touched from here on out. Eight for eight at the minute. Hard to see anybody getting past them, but this particular game, Massey will enjoy the trip up the highway a little bit. The 30-minute trip up, and they'll be too strong.
Then we go Silverdale versus Northcote. Well, this one, Silverdale, you know, they've had a few ups and downs this season, which is, a little bit of underestimation, but reality is Northcote really not having the season they would expect by their high standards, but I think just too good for Silverdale.
Yeah, they're sitting at 50% at the moment. Four wins, four losses after eight rounds, but I would suggest they'll be too strong for Silverdale. The good coaching group up there at Silverdale, and congratulations to Sam Ward, former North Harbour assistant coach, of course, coached Werner Tech here in Auckland. I see he's been named an assistant coach for Manawatu Turbos for the NPC season. But that's not going to happen after they will take to win that game.
Yep, and then we go Kumu versus Takapuna. Well, you know, Kumu, they battle, but to be quite honest with you, mate, I think Takapuna all day.
Yeah, I think so. Actually, I know Takapuna not putting their strongest side out. There's the Auckland Contenders game against Harbour Contenders. That's on Monday at Morning Park up in Massey. So I see Ben Takapuna have rested a few of their players for that particular game. And I think we'll still be far too strong for the home side. You might even go out and have a look at that game.
Yeah.
And the bottom, just before I go, that means that all the away sides may come away with today. Possibly.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, we're going to go down the southwestern motorway, avoid the road cones, and we're going to go into County's Manuka area. Now, there are a couple. I'm going to put the easy games first, the predictable ones, and then we go to two, because there's two very good games in County's Manuka. Papakura versus Bombay, Weymouth versus Patamahaui. Well, I think you see the two away sides winning there, and probably winning quite convincingly.
Exactly. Boy, it could be a weekend for the away sides at the Harbour and Counties Manukau.
Well, yeah.
This weekend. It could be, because the other two games, and like you say, I'll let you tell us the time.
Well, this one, they've got two crackers. We have Mangarewa versus Pukekohe, both heading towards the top four. Karaka versus Ardmore Marist, very much the top of the table. So we start off Mangarewa versus Pukekohe.
Oh, boy. Mangarewa at home today, everything to play for, because they will not want to drop a game, because they've got Patamahaui chip snapping away at their heels, and given that they're probably going to pick up that comfortable win against Weymouth today, it's real important for Manurewa to get the job done. They've only had the three losses this season compared to Pukekohe, but you know what, I'm going to go to Pukekohe to carry on their winning way, and we're going to keep that one away theme going for the weekend.
Absolutely. And, Karaka versus Ardmore, you could have not back against Karaka at home.
Yeah, I think so, but I'm going to. I'm going to back Ardmore Maris. I'll tell you, it's a theme this weekend. Every away team is going to win this weekend on the road, and that would be definitely a first, and both these clubs competitions, but boys stand to be corrected.
Yep, anyway, so, okay, so during the week you were up for the Northland versus Auckland contenders match. What was some of your take from that, Stephen?
Yeah, interesting. Auckland coming away with the win, 31 points to 19 after it was 12 all at halftime. Basically what it was, it's the Auckland Academy teams now. They don't often release a lot of names. Very secret squirrel, as Auckland say.
You're kidding me.
Most of the players that we saw on show were pretty much year one, year two school leaders. So you're talking probably 19, 20, 21-year-olds that were playing. So unfortunately, I don't know too many of the names, but I do know that. One of the boys, Nate Putney, who's the grabber tech this year. Boy, that came over from Brisbane boys highlight. Looked pretty impressive at Perth Farming. I do apologise, don't know too much for them, but it was an impressive performance up against the Northland team. Mostly be a high performance team, but they did have some players who were in the Northland NPA squad last year, but possibly only played one game. But it was a good contest.
Stephen, I'm going to have to stop you there. We're getting a bit of feedback.
Yep.
Yes.
We are getting a bit of feedback.
This is the Stephen we like to hear. Now, because somebody texted me, we asked him, were you on the throne being the king of the house or something?
On the throne being the king of the house?
No, the throne.
On the throne.
No, but just getting back to this contenders match, yes, there were a lot of academy players from Auckland, a lot of high performance because the majority of the players have Super Rugby contract or are probably playing overseas. When we look at this, Stephen, I will say this to you. My concerns is that we're going to go down this youth track and experience again, where they should be brought through a cult system. Now, no offence to Stephen Bates, and I think there's been a great addition to that coaching squad with Mark Oshness. I think he will add a lot to this Auckland side.
Absolutely. I will suffice to say, this was the academy squad playing on Monday. You're actually going to see up at Moira Park in Massey. You're going to see, well, it probably, I don't know what they call it, another, I think it's probably a club form 15 or club form 23 or whatever, that they'll be playing pretty much NPC contenders. So you'll see more experienced players running out on Massey. So those are players that are based on club form, but once again on the website we haven't seen any team's names, so we've got absolutely no idea. If you're in the Auckland area, it's best that you basically go and have a look. And I think it's possibly a good concept. Like, there would have been probably two or three players from that academy team that put their hand up. You know, the danger, I can understand where Auckland are coming from, because they probably don't want to put the names out there because they don't want, you know, spies looking at their potential players coming up. But, you know, I ask the question, how many of those boys from that academy team will go through and end up playing NPC, not just for Auckland, but, you know, they'll probably be farmed across the country as well. But I think you'll see genuinely more the true contenders that for the Auckland NPC. From what I've heard, they're looking for more experience compared to what they had last year. It was quite an inexperienced Auckland team, so we get more of a gauge on Monday afternoon.
Yeah, I think it's time to start looking at some of the club players in their mid-20s and start looking, saying, are these guys the guys to go through? Like, between me and you, I think having if we're going to keep NPC as it is, whether we can keep it sustainable as a fully professional competition, that's going to be the big thing.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, I think we've got to maintain it, because if you keep looking to kill pathways, like I was sort of watching a podcast during the week, and actually one of them was with Jeff Wilson on, and he was saying they should go back to three levels of NPC, and I thought to myself, sorry, Goldie, I totally disagree. That horse is already pretty much bolted. I don't think there's a heck of a lot wrong with the state that it's got at the moment. The problem is, it's you and I both know it's not a money maker.
No, it's not far from it, actually.
Actually, but if we block pathways, man, we are going to
lose that quality of that second tier going to Japan, going to America. America seems to be a very, very good place for players to get paid. The competition, and I've watched MLR rugby, and I have to say, I believe our club rugby is probably on a better level than MLR, but the simple reason is, Stephen, is that, you know, we've got a real issue in this country, and I think come after 2027, I think another major review has to come in.
Oh, wow. You know, either way, whatever decision they make, they've got to realise the importance of pathways.
Absolutely.
If you kill all your pathways, the kids will either not play, or they'll go to the 13-man. They'll go to the 13-man code. I mean to say, you know, we all know that the rival code's grown by 25%.
Oh yeah,
and unfortunately, rugby's fallen off by the same amount. You know, at the end of the day, do the maths. You know, you spoke about Major League Rugby before, but let me give you the tip. That only started on March the 29th, and they've actually only got two rounds of that competition to go. They're at their penultimate. They're playing their penultimate games this weekend. There's only six teams in the competition, and it'll pretty much be over by the middle of June. And you know, as we know, they've already cut three or four teams, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out in the wash or where that competition goes. And once again, those pathways for some players who are not playing NPC, who are playing over there, and there's quite a few New Zealanders playing over there, all of a sudden that pathway is going to dry up again. So, boy, so much to discuss. We can't get all the answers into 10 to 15 minutes, unfortunately, Amon.
Listen, we could speak for a coffee, and they'd throw us out of the cafe, because we still, you imagine we're Wairoa with us. God, they'd definitely throw us free out, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah. 100%. You know, club rugby and NPC rugby is my favourite level of rugby.
Oh, absolutely.
I consider it the foundations for me. I've a passing interest in Super Rugby, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Like I say, the best game I've watched this year was the Canterbury, Crusaders Chiefs game last Friday night.
Yeah.
I watched a bit of last night's game, nothing on it, and quite frankly, it kind of mirrored that second half, looked more like NPC than it did Super level rugby, but that had to do with one team being too strong and the other side probably realising that they're already locked in for home quarterfinals, semifinals, etc. And that's exactly what we got accordingly.
Absolutely, absolutely, Stephen. Well, we'll leave you to it, and we'll just have a quick chat off natter off here, and then we'll get ready for next week. Anyway,
let's
play a bit of music.
Yeah, I'm good. Look forward to it.
Cheers. Okay, we'll just get a bit of music on.
Can I walk here beside you? Can I speak your name? Can I just be here? Can I speak in anger? Can I speak in shame? Can I just be here? Fire.
just be here? Can you find the pieces that I can rearrange? Can I just be here? It's clear you don't have to worry at all. Now that it's clear you can do what you like.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Just before we go on, we go on to Joey Green. Just a big shout out. This is brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the base station, keep the wife's tomatoes, plants happy, all with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions, no worries, and different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Well, that's thank you very much to the crew at WaterSmart. Well, we'll talk a bit of rugby league and I suppose a bit of an announcement. Joey Green, who's a usual, who's on the line, has been appointed, as we all know, he's a referee to the NRLW, refereeing team for this season. Congratulations, Joey.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It's a pleasure to be on this morning, and yeah, I think I'm pretty grateful to be a part of the NRLW squad for another year. Having a few opportunities to be on the sidelines for that last year and in amongst those NRL guys, it's just, it's cool to be able to be a little South Aucklander and being in amongst the big time of some sorts.
Absolutely. Congratulations to you. Well, we might as well go kick it off. Obviously, big Origin game during the week. Yes, it was a game of two halves, and it was a game of one half until Caelan Ponga went off, but in the end, New South Wales victorious against a 12-man Queensland side.
Yeah, look, obviously the game was kind of marred from the controversy, some might say, about the Caelan Ponga sending off. Look, I don't mind the decision. I think it's a very competent call, from Ash Klein, obviously, to have a bit of back and forth with the bunker and, come to a decision on his own. But at the end of the day, like the rule book says, the referee has sole judge of fact and time. So if he wants to rule it that way, then no one can really argue with that at the end of the day. Queensland, before that send-off happened, we're looking like the high and mighty team. New South Wales weren't too far off, but they just couldn't quite seem to get their moments sorted, and Queensland making the most of theirs. But now that it's, the one man down, Nathan Cleary kind of took the reins of the team and made the most of the extra space.
Absolutely. Well, this weekend is a big one for the Warriors. They take on the Panthers, the top-of-the-table clash. Players out with State of Origin on both sides. But when I look at both sides, are still able to put out very good lineups. I look at the Panthers side, the Edwards, the likes of the Dillian Edwards, the Liam Martins, the Mossy Leotas, and then you look at the likes of the Warriors, where we do have a superb lineup. There is one thing I am going to make a prediction. I've just got this feeling Luke Metcalf may be brought into the squad on the bench at least.
Yeah, like I could imagine he'll very much find himself in that 90-man squad as well. Whether he starts, alongside Timothy Martin, or even comes into the side for Martin. I thought even last week, yes, they probably weren't as convincing as others might seem. But when you look at when the Panthers took on the Dragons the week prior at Magic Round 2, they weren't so convincing against the Dragons either. They got the win last week, and albeit a bit tougher than expected in tough conditions too. But when you look at this weekend matchup too, top of the table clash, end of the round, the Penrith Origin stars still in their 24-man squad, so we might still see them back up. It's a longer turnaround for them. The Warriors Origin stars won't back up, but I don't think the Warriors will be too phased if they get the win or not. I think it'll be good for them just to see where they're at, especially with the set that the Panthers side being the form team of the competition at the moment. So it's going to be a great test to see how they can mix it with, you know, the top end of the ladder, especially at this point of the season. You know, nearly at the halfway point, heading into the back end of the season, they've basically got a full strength squad. So you know whether they can get the 2 points over Penrith tomorrow night. That'll be a massive win, not only in context of the season, but for the players heading into the second half of the 2026 season.
Absolutely. Well, last night we only had one game due to Origin, and that was the Sharks 28, the Seagulls 22. Brayley was in absolute form, but obviously the big news coming out is he's broken his forearm. But Tindall was fantastic, wasn't he?
Yeah, I thought the Cronulla side without Nicho Hynes and the Trindle combination might have been I thought Fosball might have got the upper hand in that one, but I still don't think that Manly are too far off with, you know, since they've changed coaches. You know, Braden Trindle just managed to take the reins of the team, as he has been for a large chunk of this season, to be fair. And, you know, just managed to control the game really well for Cronulla. I thought Manly kind of missed that aggression of Ola Kawatu on that right edge, the X factor of Tolu Kola on the left edge as well. So, concerns if you're Blake Brayley, and not only in terms of Origin, but in terms of, you know, Cronulla's season as well. But massive credit to Craig Fitzgibbon for getting the 2 points last night.
Absolutely. And then we go to the weekend games, and there's 3 on Saturday and 2 on Sunday. We started off Knights versus Eels, West Tigers versus Bulldogs, and this one, which should be a cracker of game, to finish off the Saturday night, the Storm versus the Roosters.
Yeah, 3 real massive matchups on your Super Saturday are the Knights taking on Parramatta at home. I'm probably looking more at Parramatta than the Knights, to be fair. The Knights basically at full strength. Jacob Saifidi didn't see any minutes on Wednesday night, so he comes back in. Kalen Ponga free to play after the send-off on Wednesday, whether you agree that he's playing or not. You know, he's still in that side. Fletcher Sharp on that left centre. You just got to have as much X-factor in that Knights side as you can. Isaiah Yongi comes back into the side for Parramatta, so whether he's going to be, you know, a key guy now that Mitch Moses is out and Volkman's running the ship. If Isaiah Yongi is as good a player as he can be, he might see the Parramatta side see an upset, but I can see the Knights winning pretty convincingly at home. The Tigers and the Bulldogs, up at Coruscant is back for the Tigers, so whether that's going to be as influential.
A big get back for the Tigers, mate. He's so good at Epi Coruscant.
Oh, 100%. Jacob Preston falls out of the side for the Bulldogs. So we see Harry Hayes moving into the lock jersey and Salmon move to the second row. Whether that makes much of a difference to the attack, is Harry Hayes a bit more of that just go forward, not much muck around kind of guy. So whether they kind of change up their attack or not will remain to be seen. But I'm liking the look of how the Tigers face off. And then the Storm take on the Roosters. Jack Hetherington comes back into the side for Melbourne. Looks like the Origin guys are going to back up for both the Storm and the Roosters. So I would assume that with how good the Roosters can be on paper, they're probably going to look like they're going to be the favourites to get the job done there. But you can never really quite count out the Melbourne, especially at home on a Saturday night too.
And then we go to the Sunday games. Wow, there's a lot of people that are trying to pick these games, and they're saying there could be a big upset at the weekend. I can't see it. So we've got 2 games. Obviously, we've spoken about the Warriors versus the Panthers, but then we look at the other Sunday games. The Broncos versus the Dragons and the Raiders versus the Cowboys. The one that people are picking as an upset could be the Dragons over the Broncos.
I don't know what people are thinking, to be fair. I think if the Dragons are going to get a win anytime soon, it's most likely going to be at home, especially with the Broncos.
Well, I think the next points they'll get will be on the bye weekend.
Yeah, exactly right. I can't see them getting a win anytime soon, especially over not only the Warriors, but any side for the next month. So the Dragons, are probably looking at another tough Sunday afternoon. But then the Raiders and the Cowboys, look, it's going to be a really tough one to call, because the Raiders at home couldn't quite get it done against the Dolphins. The Cowboys got it done, in a very tough way against the Bunnies last weekend. So that's a really tough game to call.
Absolutely. Anyway, we move on to Auckland Rugby League and, of course, the Planet FM, the home of Auckland Rugby League, on an FM frequency. I think we're the only ones who do, but anyway. The Fox Memorial Premiership. So, these are the games. Marist Saints versus Bay Roskill, Mount Albert versus Ponsonby, Otahuhu versus Manukau and a Southern Derby. Well, last week, as I'd have said, speaking to people involved at Bay Roskill, Otahuhu, who was so dominant, and of course, a bit of an upset last week with Marist Saints beating Point Chev.
Yeah, 100%, and I think speaking to a few people in and around the Point Chev club as well, I think they just took Marist a little bit too lightly. They kind of named a bit of a weaker side. Marist, have been looking for a win all season too, so credit to them for getting up for that one last week. And it wouldn't surprise me if they get up again for another win this week as well against the Bay Roskill side, who, like you said, just got out dominated, to be fair, from a very, very strong Otahuhu side. And I have no doubt they'll probably look to dominate Manukau when they take them on as well. But Marist, they upset Point Chev last week. Could we see them upset Bay Roskill again this afternoon?
Well, that could be the big one, but yeah, that's a tough one to call. Mount Albert versus Ponsonby, and I forgot to add the Papakura Point Shed match as well, but Mount Albert, Ponsonby, your thoughts on that, Joey?
Yeah, look, Ponsonby, another dark horse as well. Like we've touched on for the last few weeks, they're not exactly going to be the easy beats that everyone probably thought they were coming into the competition. They got a big upset over Papakura last week, and they've, like we said, they went within 2 points of Otahuhu. They, competed very well with Manukau for 60 minutes of that game. They managed to put out a pretty complete performance last weekend, and whether they can put another one out just down the road of Mount Albert too. Mount Albert, will be counting themselves very lucky last weekend. They very nearly got upset by Manukau, but just managed to sneak away there. So I'm sure their coaching staff would be hoping that we don't see a similar performance this afternoon. But then Papakura taking on Point Chev, both sides upset last weekend. Point Chev obviously from Marist, and Papakura upset rather dominantly from Ponsonby too, so they'll both be wanting to get their seasons back on track, especially Papakura, who have really struggled to start 2026, which it very much isn't like Papakura sides of the last couple of years. Same with Point Chev, they've got a very, very young mix. They welcome back Noah Jensen, a very young, talented halfback who's had a bit of a health battle over the last couple of years. So that'll be hopefully a happy result for them this afternoon. But yeah, both sides will be wanting to get their season back on track.
Absolutely. And then we go to the Steel Shanks Women's Premiership, and we have Mount Albert versus Mangarewa, Mangere East versus Otahuhu, Manukau versus Richmond.
Yeah, look, this Women's Premiership is getting tougher and tougher to call by the week. We saw Otahuhu quite dominant over Mount Albert last weekend, and then this afternoon they have a local derby against Whangarei East, who managed to sneak home last weekend against the Manukau Magpies. So they'll be looking to get the upper hand on their neighbours again in that one. But Otahuhu, if they stay true to their form, I'm thinking they'll dominate there against the Whangarei East Hawks. Mount Albert against Manurewa. Manurewa in a bit of all sorts to start the season. The last couple of years, a lot of those girls have been in Papakura and have seen some large amounts of success in past seasons too, but they just can't quite find that form so far to start the year. So whether they can find that again against the Mount Albert side, who have been a little bit here and there to start the season as well. But then Manukau taking on Richmond. Manukau, like we mentioned basically the whole year, very young side. Whether they can start to find their way back into the season. They had a tough loss last weekend against Whangarei East, and it doesn't get much easier against Richmond, who upset Otahuhu a couple of weeks ago. So a tough task for the young girls from Manukau, but I think that'll probably be the game to watch.
Absolutely. Well, Joey, thank you very, very much, and thanks for making yourself available. We will catch up during the week for a bit of a chat, and we'll do what we always do, promoting rugby league, whether it's NRL or Auckland Rugby League, across the station.
Always a pleasure chatting rugby league, mate, whether it be NRL, ARL and everything in between. Always a pleasure.
Awesome, mate, and you do a great job of it. Cheers, Joey.
Cheers, mate. We'll chat again next week.
Yep, no worries. Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. Next up, we have Garth Galloway on some cricket, so...
of solitude. Red wine, just a glass or two. Give me something fun to do.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. And before we go any further, a big shout out to Enterprise Recruitment. Finding the right people can be hard. Many unexpected surprises. So cut out those unexpected surprises by contacting Enterprise Recruiting, where they will find you the right people to suit your business needs. So contact enterprise.co.nz. A big shout out to Ian and Warwick from Enterprise. Thank you so much for your support. Anyway, we might as well speak a bit of cricket. And here to join us, as he joins us, the great man himself, Mr. Galloway. Garth Galloway, how are you?
Hey, no, I'm good. I'm well, thank you. How are you, mate?
I'm good. But do you know when you expect something and you expected it to finish early? Well, the Black Caps versus Ireland. Well, this was the summary of the test. New Zealand batted first, 490 for 8. Tom Blundell, 186. Fantastic innings. Ravindra, 121. Foxcroft, 98. Mark Adair, who I think was definitely the best Irish player with both bat and ball, 3 wickets. Then 179 Ireland were bowled out for. Nathan Smith, 6 for 40, 5 wickets in a session. Fantastic. And then the follow-on, Ireland were bowled out for 232. Doherty, 52. Tucker, 50. Adair, 44. 5 wickets for Blair Tickner. Just your thoughts on this test. Did we expect this to be this easy?
I think so. I think when you look at the Irish side, the captain, Balbirnie, has played, I think, in all 12 of the test matches they've played. He averages something like 23, and his average in first-class cricket is not much better. They're very inexperienced bowling attack. Like you, I was incredibly impressed with the opening bowler and the batter who scored, 44 not out in the second innings. I thought he was fantastic. He moved the ball around and he troubled the openers. I think the only thing that I was a little bit surprised about, and I don't think it's really been discussed, I thought New Zealand should have batted again in the second innings. I would have really liked to have seen Conway and Latham and Williamson having another go. Although the Irish side was weak, I just felt that with 3 tests coming up in England, it would have been an invaluable opportunity just to get some time in the middle. And of course, Latham didn't last for long. Conway played a poor shot to get out, and I just think, another opportunity, even if it's a couple of hours, would have been good for them. But look, they played well. Nice to see. I thought Smith bowled beautifully. Tickner obviously bowled well overnight. Smith, I thought he might be quite interesting in England, and I think the New Zealand selectors are lining him up. He reminds me a little bit of, he's a player who doesn't swing the ball prodigiously, but with the Duke ball, we saw that he gets just enough to be a menace, and he might be quite useful in England. It reminds me when we go back to the World Cup where Jeff Elliott took 22 wickets and equaled Shane Warne's World Cup record in those days. And he, of course, you'll remember, was bowling with a Duke ball. Now, Jeff was a bowler who was quick and quite, brusque and brisk and hurried players on with his left arm quick. But he didn't move the ball in the air much. And when he got to England and used the Duke ball again, he moved the ball just a fraction, and it was enough to make him very difficult to play indeed. And he had a wonderful World Cup. And just watching Smith and the way he was getting the ball to move quite late in both ways, I thought he looks very useful. No spin used, only one over for Foxcroft. So New Zealand putting really all of their hopes, I think, in England on their seam attack.
Absolutely. And then, when you look at it, like, you're probably right. And plus, Nathan Smith has experiences bowling in those English conditions with his time in county cricket.
Yeah, he played for Worcestershire, came back early, was injured, but they were very disappointed to lose him. He finished, I think he played about 9 games for Worcestershire first-class cricket and performed well for them, and they were really enjoying him.
Absolutely. Well, the White Ferns have they've finished their 2020 series against England last week. Of course, they lost the first one day. Second one day, they came back 170 for 5. Sophie Devine, Matty Green, great partnership. 87 by Devine, Matty Green 56. England bowled out for 156. Patel 2 for 25. She will be very, very key for this World Cup.
Absolutely, and you and I have talked about her before, particularly when we talked in the New Zealand-South Africa series at home, and Susie Bates was picked to bat at number 8 and be the top spinner. My view is that Nancy Patel's a much better bowler than Bates as an off-spinner. She's a specialist, and, you know, I continue to struggle with Susie's inclusion, even though, you know, she's an incredible, again, I don't ever take anything away from her remarkable achievements, but we're just watching some sad struggles, really. Devine, superb, brutish, really, in the way that she's taken on the English players. Quite different, actually. I watched the game between India, the first one T20 game between India and England, and India were just magnificent. And you watch the Indian players, they were doing things that the New Zealanders couldn't do. They were hitting the English spinners through the offside. New Zealand just seemed incapable of it. And India, just a class above. They were magnificent. Devine, you know, just brutal through the onside, the way she hits the ball. She looks just so much better without the captaincy. They're going to really miss her. She's a tough competitor, and I think her batting in that series has been fantastic. And you touched on Matty Green as well. You know, nice to see her really becoming at a later stage in her career. But she's developing so well, and I do use that word developing. I still think she's developing as a player, and she's making some really meaningful contributions. And as you said, that partnership when New Zealand were in all sorts of trouble between her and Devine was a really wonderful effort. I think that the concern with the batting is again at the top. Again, Plimmer dropped for the last game, you know, finally dropped after, I think, after years of indifference, really. We've seen her improve as a player. Her ball striking is excellent. And just when you think she's turning the corner and going to convert into runs, you know, another poor series by her. And she just seems to get out playing poor shots, whereas if she could just discipline herself better, she could be a leading run scorer for New Zealand. So just a moment for her to reflect and see where she ends up. She won't be, you know, I'm sure she'll play during the World Cup. Of course she will. But we want to see her getting, you know, a meaningful score against top sides. Concerns with Gaze at the top of the order as well. I understand that New Zealand want to be aggressive, but that doesn't seem to be working particularly well. And I think some real concerns with the form of Halliday, who slumped after a very good series, you know, last couple of seasons, really. She's been an integral part of the side. So they're looking for more from her. And obviously a little bit of concern about Kerr's form with the bat as well. But we all know what a class player she is. I'm sure she'll be fine.
Yeah, and of course, obviously, we lost that third one day disgracefully. 80 bowled out and England 81 for 3. Big decisions need to come with this team coming to the World Cup. And the big thing is, and we've already mentioned Brooke Halliday out of form. Susie Bates, you know, really struggling at the moment. There's so many issues which they've got to make the call now in that first World Cup game. Just that the World Cup is really, this becomes New Zealand cricket's downfall at times. A World Cup is not a chance to be sentimental. You have to be there to win it. Sorry, Gav.
Yeah, absolutely. No, look, I couldn't agree more. Look, I get frustrated watching, you know, again, some of the shot selection. So, again, if you watch the English players, I thought they were just fantastic in their shot selection. New Zealand, and you look at a player like Heather Knight, who plays the reverse sweep magnificently, and we continue to see New Zealand players like Gaze trying to play this reverse sweep shot and getting caught at backward point. You know, when they're really strong strikers of the ball down the ground, and that's their strong point, I just, you know, it's been something that's been sort of an epidemic almost in the New Zealand side for a long period of time. And I absolutely cringe when I see them going to that shot, because none of the New Zealand players play it particularly well. So So, you know, Brooke Halliday does, but she's been out of form. The bowling side of things, you know, I'm really excited to see the way Bree Ealing is coming on. She's becoming, you know, a top-class cricketer now, and she's been a little bit expensive, but she's curbed that a bit in this recent series, and she's picked up wickets. So she now looks to me really to be the spearhead of the attack in terms of pace at the top of the innings. And Amelia Kerr, again, by her standards, not such a good series, but she'll be a key part in the World Cup as well. And lovely, as you touched on, to see Nancy Patel coming forward. Yeah. Her fielding lets her down a little bit at times, but she's a good cricketer and she's not a bad bat either. And I think she adds a lot to the squad.
Absolutely. Well, at 15 years of age, I know what I was doing. 15 years of age, you know what you were doing. We went in the IPL hitting 97 runs of 29 balls.
Surinavanchi, yeah, unbelievable player, 15 years of age. There is some question.
Yeah, well, I've got Brendan Telfer on later on, he's wrapped and he thinks there should be more coverage, and that we could be having a bit of an argument because, you know, very.
Oh, you never want to argue with Telf. He'll be all over you like a rash, frankly. But
lately it's been a draw. It's been a draw. I'm holding. You know, I've grown up since being on the station. I probably needed to at my age.
768 runs, I think he scored. Leading run scorer in the IPL. A strike rate of over 200. He is just a sensational cricketer, whatever age he is. He's unbelievable to watch. And the thing about him, and this is what will be exciting to tell, he just goes from the first ball. He doesn't do any sort of any warming up or anything. He just launches. He just fantastic six-sicker. Quite incredible. Just raw. And hopefully we'll be in the Indian side, and you'll get to see him playing a lot of international cricket. He's an extraordinary talent. And I must say, I've enjoyed the competition. You know, there's a lot of, it's set up for the Indian audiences, isn't it? And the Indian crowds, and they're obsessive about it. And just watching, the ball striking, you wouldn't really want to be a bowler. I was just looking at the economy rates for the bowlers, isn't it? And,
Pat Cummings took a real bath in that match.
Oh, absolutely. But anyone who's, you know, going at sort of 9 and over is doing pretty well now. The score's getting up over 200. You think 220 and things are safe. It's not anymore. You know, it's just a funeral for the bowlers. It must be brutally tough mentally to keep charging in.
Absolutely. Well, I'll send you your regards on to Telf. I know for a fact that don't repeat what we said on here. because I'll probably get a very angry text about this, but no, because Brendan actually said it, and then I watched that, and it, wow, just amazing striker of the ball.
He is. Well, look, if he gets Telf excited, then that's telling you something at his age.
Well, he had a birthday party. Did you get the invite at all?
No, missed that one. No,
same here too. And I get him on air every month. You know, didn't they mention?
Yeah,
you know.
I think it would have been a BYO, Eamon.
come on, he's not here to defend himself. On that note, we'll catch you later, Garth. Have a fantastic weekend, mate.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers. Bye. Garth Galloway, fantastic, probably the best cricket analyst in the country, and not only that, a very, very funny and witty man. Anyway, next up, Noel Barkley as we speak football.
It makes me feel alive. Our love is powerful, so powerful. Moving mountains in the night. Oh, and I know sometimes this is hard for us. I know we sacrificing gets God anchor. Oh, I know, I feel it's moving. Let's never lose this movement. Momentum is building, our union is fluid. Like water, clean, clear, crisp. We got love just like this. Water, our love is like water. Executed, left, I delivered from the edge of life. How they left you right, that's how they left you right. I picked up the pieces, they left you in broken pieces. On the floor, flowing in holy light.
love you very much. They don't love you more than me. This you can't trust. Oh,
I know. I feel it's moving. Let's never lose this. This moving momentum is golden. Our union is fluid.
Anyway, welcome back to the Sports Weekender. Hey, you're looking to buy, you're looking to sell, you're looking for the right people to give you the right advice and get the best results. Well, there's two people, two very, very good friends of mine, Robert Thompson and Deborah Thompson from Team Thompson. They work out of the Barfords office in Epsom, and they both are fantastic professional people to deal with, and they will strive to get you the good results. So this is Robert's number, 021-737 and 949, or r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. If you can't get hold of Robert, give Deborah a call. Her number is 021-673-600, d.thompson@barfords.co.nz is her email address. So hope everything's well with you, young Robert, and hope you're enjoying the show as well too, mate. Anyway, we will talk about a football. Well, the big guys are just away this weekend, so I had to find someone desperately, and I saw him coming through on a scooter down Albert Street the other day. Former All White, Noel Barkley. Good morning to you, Noel.
Good morning, Eamon. I'm trying to save my feet from my trip to Europe, so I'm just back. But yeah, scooter's the best way to get around town, that's for sure, but that was a bit funny.
Yeah, it was funny when I saw you. I was thinking, Jesus, don't have an accident, mate, because then I've got to find someone else. And I shouldn't. You noticed I wasn't concerned about your own health. I was concerned about my show, so selfish.
Absolutely.
Hey, now, what a, obviously, last weekend, fantastic weekend as it was for Auckland FC as an organisation. Obviously, big changes to come next year, but Auckland FC won, Sydney nil, probably not one of the greatest matches, but for a guy like Cam Howison, guy that played his football at Mosgiel, a guy that went round, who went to England, played in Scotland, came back to New Zealand, committed to staying in Auckland, what a dream for him.
Yeah, it certainly was for Cam, and I think we all got a bit of a soft spot for him. Hasn't been his year really, and until sort of the last sort of third of the year when Gallagher get injured. But I mean, yeah, look, it was a final, it was scrappy, but the atmosphere in the ground is something that you're not going to experience in any other codes in this country, that's for sure.
Yeah, I
think you could tell by the number of people that actually sung the national anthem, like, you know, both verses, and there was a real energy in the crowd. It was just a special night, and you know, for me and a few others that started this journey 20 odd years ago to get a team in the Australian League, it was fitting and satisfying, and to see that this incredible organization and came out and have done pretty much everything that they said they were going to do, and now become the champions of Australasia. You know, it was a fantastic night. Our family was there, had a great time. Everybody seems to be converted to at least a somewhat football fan, and that's great. And I think the club will build from this. Yes, there's some challenges. We're seeing them already with Dan Hall heading off to Hanoi.
Big money
and there'll be others. And but, you know, some of these players that we've got, you know, DeVries and Jesse Randall and, you know, Nando Pinnock, they didn't cost us anything. So there's lots of Kiwi players now that don't actually cost us money in a way. And look what they've been able to do. Mac Vault's another one. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, the pre-season. Lachlan Bayliss maybe coming in, or signing who he would be.
Oh, brilliant.
So, yeah, I'm not too worried about that now. Ins and outs is part of football.
I'm just going to say this right now. Now, I read the article by Michael Burgess in the Herald, and I'm going to have to congratulate Michael on that. I actually sent him a text because this was 20 years in the making. This was over 20, 25 years in the making for this franchise, for Auckland and football. It was different times when you and your friends started the what was known as the Football Kings to what we have today. And, you know, we talk about, obviously, the good work of Bill Foley, Ali Williams, Anna Mowbray, Nick Becker, but this was really started by people like yourself, Noel, and I think it was great that Michael Burgess recognised that.
Yeah, look, thank you. I mean, my job is to get us in, and once we got in, I departed to other things. So, but we broke ground, and yeah, there was bubbles along the way and hurdles along the way, but somebody had to kick it off, and we live in a different world now, a different environment, where most professional sport is, you know, philanthropic, and Bill certainly saw the opportunity. I do feel a little bit sorry for the Auckland City boys on the weekend, you know, I mean, that could have been them on the Saturday, and it could also have been them on the Sunday with the Auckland FC OFC team qualifying for Intercontinental Cups, which used to be their domain. So, look, it's good and progressive. The club said they were going to win, and they've won both trophies, and New Zealand football's in a better state. I think they're talking about they've got 65 professionals, of which sort of 40 of them are Kiwis. Well, you know, that's hard to beat.
That's good, and when you also look at it, the ramifications, it means that, you know what, we are going to have the scouts out from Europe having a look at players. New Zealand players are going to have these opportunities for pathways, whether it be in Europe, whether it be in North America, whether it be in Asia. You know, the opportunities are now there, and I think it's fantastic. I said it to Seamus a couple of weeks ago. New Zealand football hasn't had a time like this ever in the history of that I've known this.
Yeah, look, it's good times. You know, New Zealand football is well run these days. It's always been the case, and there's good leadership with them. But I also think that what an amazing time to have a World Cup, like a month after Auckland win the A-League, because any of those football, rugby, league fans, transient, netball, all people, to have a, you know, World Cup where watching games is actually pretty easy and pretty affordable for most people. So, and hopefully New Zealand can do us proud and, you know, get some results and do well. There's no reason why we can't. We're ready. And, yeah, I just think the World Cup on the back of what just happened is just incredible time, and it means we just don't have a big lull and waiting for next season, which is a way away.
Well, I must admit, football is a gift that keeps on giving. That's all I can say about football at the moment. Anyway, just some of the results in the Northern League that was played Thursday and Friday. Tauranga 1, Melville 0. Birkenhead, who are leading the competition, who haven't lost a game, 3-1 over East Coast Bays. Auckland FC Reserves 2, Auckland United 0. Manukau 1, Fencibles, one of your old teams, 2. Western Springs 3, Bay Olympic 0. And, of course, one game played today is Eastern Suburbs versus Auckland City. No women's league, Northern League, because it's a Kate Shepherd Cup. And good luck. And I'm speaking about all your old clubs. Unimount, now, and they're now known as Unimount Bohos versus Auckland University of Auckland. Good luck to Paulie Landers and the boys.
Yeah, look, nothing beats Chatham Cup or Kate Shepherd Cup as it is with the women's. As you know, that cup is a very special thing for me. So, yeah, good luck to all those teams. Always good to see some upsets and push some of the teams along. And Birko looked at running away with the Northern League. They're way at the top. Auckland City lost a few games at the start, but on their way back. So I expect them to win today at Eastern Suburbs.
Absolutely. Anyway, all Whites start their first preparation before the World Cup. They have a match against Haiti on Thursday. Now, looking at this, obviously, they're already shouting out there's only one Tim Payne across Instagram, as we've seen all the big stories. But I think this will be a chance for Darren Baisley just to look at combinations before the England match and before that important first match against Iran.
Yeah, look, I think he's pretty settled on what his first team looks like, and I've already sort of publicly sort of put my team out there. I think it's an opportunity for just reconfirm that he's got it right. You know, is it Paulson or is it Crombie? You know, is it Old or is it McCallum? You know, is Libby fit enough or does he stick with De Vries or Elliot? So, yeah, I think those are the question marks. I think that the team pretty much picks itself. Obviously, you've got a couple of games Haiti will be a little bit easier. England game's a bit of an unknown how that's going to be like, given their recent results and friendlies. I would have thought they're going to be really pumped for it, because they've got lots of issues with who to play and who not to play. Looking forward to both games. Hopefully we can get through, get some minutes in you know, players' legs, and and let's not get walloped by somebody, because that wouldn't be great. The England game does worry me a little bit, but I think defensively now, we're good enough where we're not going to cough up loads of goals, and if we lose, lose gallantly.
Yeah, I would say that right now. I think the thing about it is, the other thing too is that you've probably seen in the news, the 65,000 stadium which we're playing in England, there's only 15,000 tickets being sold because they're saying it's just too expensive.
Yeah, and I've heard a bit of that from friends of mine who've got people living in America, and at $250 US for a friendly. I guess that's the way the FIFA model works, really. I'm sure that's a game that they'll have in charge of in some regards. But and I think once the World Cup kicks off, the group games, apparently the New Zealand Iran game sold out. You can't get tickets, so it's largely based on the 500,000 Iranians that live in LA. But we will be in the minority then, and hopefully that's the start of something really special. It's certainly they're underprepared, and we're well prepared, and that's the game I think we target to try and win.
Absolutely.
And not draw, but actually win it. So
yeah.
Looking forward to being there.
Absolutely. Well, of course, a rather big game tomorrow morning. Paris Saint-Germain versus Arsenal. Arsenal, fresh off winning the EPL. To me, PSG, you've got to say, they're the overwhelming favourites here, Noel, but there's just something about this Arsenal team, Noel.
Well, as you know, I'm a lifelong PSG fan, I hope that they win. But seriously, I think they will win. They're certainly the best team in Europe, maybe the club, maybe the world. Finals have a habit of sort of, turning something up that you don't expect. I really hope that it's a good game, probably more than anything. I mean, I'm not too fussed about who wins. I'd hate for it to be drab. It's on 4 a.m. in the morning, and I'm not sure if the streamer has got a replay a little bit later. So I'll get up and watch it live. So I sure hope that it's a decent game. I hope Arsenal don't shut the gate and just play the way they've sort of played in the last few games. But I think they will, because I think that's the only chance. They won't want an open free-for-all, ding-dong game, because they'll lose that convincingly. So, can't wait. Big day for 20 years since they've been in a Champions League final. And I've got a few Arsenal friends that are chomping at the bit at the minute. So, as long as it's a good game, it's the main thing.
Well, I have to say, it's been an interesting EPL season. In the end, Arsenal held on to win the EPL. Manchester City was second, a much improved Manchester United, which pleased both of us, Noel. And then obviously Aston Villa not only qualifying for Europe, but obviously the big thing is that winning a European trophy in the Europa League. Unfortunately, those filthy Scousers still stay in Europe, but for Bournemouth, and of course I reckon this has been flown under the radar, Sunderland. First year back up in Premier League, and now they're going to be playing UEFA in the Europa League next season.
Yeah, I have to be honest. I knew that Chelsea needed to win that last game. I had no idea that Sunderland were actually in the running to win, which is clearly the motivation that they had. So I think it's been a good EPL, and there's only ever really been two contenders, but it's gone pretty much to the last week. And saying that, Arsenal have won by 7 points, so City just sort of fell off a little bit, which you'd sort of expect when it looked like the writing's on the wall. Good for United, glad they reappointed Carrick. Now it's about making some good signings, getting rid of some deadwood and balancing the books. And the fact that the English teams have done so well means that they've got loads of teams that play in Europe again, and that's what you'd expect for the top league in the world.
Well, I was also going to mention, obviously, the two teams we predicted, Wolves and Burnley, went down sadly for West Ham. It wasn't the last day. Tottenham kept themselves up there, so Tottenham coming out here to play Auckland FC. I was actually banned, and to my mates, who my West Ham fan mates, I was talking to a friend of mine who's Welsh, and he just said, if you know any Hammers fans, tell them there's a lot of good drinking places in Wrexham, Swansea and Cardiff.
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
yeah,
I've just got a text.
We picked up Wambasaka and Bowen would be.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't mind Bowen, actually. Bowen would be brilliant.
Yeah.
But no, it was great to have a chat to you. Thank you for filling in this segment. I know that you're off to America soon, and I really hope you enjoy the World Cup. I know it's not your first World Cup, but I think this is going to be a great experience.
Yeah, can't wait. Absolutely can't wait. Going with a whole bunch of friends, and we just know it's going to be fun. I'm going to see my son in LA for the Iran game. He's coming over from London. So, yeah, it's just lots of special things going on, which, has me buzzing.
Now, please, you know, Noel, you're a good friend of mine. I don't want to see you on that scooter. It scares me. At your age, it absolutely scares me, mate.
I've had lots of practice.
No, have a good weekend, and we will catch up. We will catch up after the World Cup, and really enjoy it, mate. Really enjoy your time, man.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Have a good day. Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. That was Noel Barkley. Well, I have to say, Noel, true professional, and I always enjoy Noel's chat, and of course he's off to the World Cup, and we sort of hope that it becomes a good World Cup for us anyway. Okay, so I might as well get to... Okay, this morning, I was able to conduct an interview with Professor Mark Orams from Auckland University of Technology, and what we were speaking about was the first preliminary regatta in Sardinia. So I will get to that right now, so if you just give me a second. Move the microphone there, and here we go. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekend. Well, last weekend in Sardinia, the first of the America's Cup preliminary regattas was held in the Road to Naples 2027. Well, it was won by Luna Rossa, but here to chat to us about that regatta is Professor Mark Orams, a former sailor on Team New Zealand and a man who really knows his America's Cup. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Eamon.
Yeah, good. I have to say, that first regatta, it's really snuck up on us, but won by Luna Rossa. Now, Peter Berlin on the boat for Luna Rossa. You know, I'm just looking at this, and I looked at some of the highlights. They looked very dominant through the regatta, did Luna Rossa. So was this what you expected, Mark?
Yes, it was, actually, with one possible exception, and that is that the regatta until the final day was dominated by the Luna Rossa youth and women's team as opposed to their sort of A-team with Peter Berling on board. But I have to say, with regard to the Peter Berling issue, it was very strange to hear the onboard communications coming from the Italian boat and to hear Peter's very measured and calm voice coming off that boat instead of Team New Zealand, which, of course, is all we've known for the last three America's Cups. So that took a little bit of adjustment mentally. The other part of it was that Luna Rossa, in terms of the A-team that Peter Berling was on, really flew under the radar for the first few days of the regatta. They were there or thereabouts, but they weren't setting the world on fire. But when it mattered, as is often the case with Peter Berling, they came up with the goods and won the final match race convincingly over Emirates Team New Zealand.
Yes, it does seem weird watching all this fleet race, and I know it's exciting, but I suppose when we come down to America's Cup, it's pure match racing. But looking at the two boats, and of course this is a time where boats get tested, but looking at this, the gap was, I know there were a few mistakes made by Emirates Team New Zealand, but
what do they have to do to get in preparation before the next regatta to close the gap?
Well, they've got to get race sharper. Perhaps it's understandable, but it's uncharacteristic for Emirates Team New Zealand to be making some of the basic mistakes that they did. One in the fleet racing where they were leading, going to the finish, they had one jibe to do, and yes, it was sort of top-end conditions with waves and lots of breeze, but they blew their final jibe and ended up nose-diving the boat off the foils, and they went from first to last in that race. And that's the sort of thing that you look for, is being able to execute at critical times in racing. The other big mistake that they made that actually cost them the regatta was the time on distance judgment for the start and the last match race against Lernarossa. They got it wrong. They were too early and they were trying to burn off speed and they couldn't do it. And they were over the line early and as a result got a penalty, and that meant they were had to give up hundreds of metres to Lernarossa, and that was it. That was the game over, really. So you know, a couple of instances there of just pretty fundamental errors at critical times in races.
Absolutely, and of course, when we look at this, of course, the biggest thing is when you look at that, it's like Blair Tuchuk is not on the boat, is he?
No, and that's another, I think, a major observation from my perspective. While Blair Tuchuk remains with Emirates Team New Zealand, he's made the decision to step away from the sailing team. And to fulfil more of a liaison between the design team and the sailing team. And that's Blair's, yeah, Blair gets to make that call. He's done everything that you can do in the America's Cup, won three straight America's Cups, won three Olympic medals and multiple world championships, been on the podium in the Round the World Yacht Race. You know, he's somebody who, alongside of Peter Burling, the most successful partnership in New Zealand sailing history. So I don't begrudge him his decision, but here we have now a situation where the key dynamic duo, the most successful sailors in New Zealand history, and that's not just the America's Cup, bar none, in my view, we now have neither of those people sailing on Emirates Team New Zealand in defending the 38th America's Cup. And that's significant. You lose that sort of talent from your sailing team, and the experience, the composure, the ability to execute at critical times in races, that for me means that Team New Zealand and their sailing team appears to be quite vulnerable compared to almost unbeatable in the last two America's Cups.
You know what, when I'm just hearing what you said on our conversation yesterday, and I've thought about this for a long time, and I know it's a different type of America's Cup, but it sort of reminds you a bit of when Russell and Brad and Murray Jones went to Alinghi, and a very young Team New Zealand, probably not the best boat in the world, was competing against a very experienced team.
Yeah, perhaps a slightly different situation, but yeah, I think that probably the difference here is that the Team New Zealand sailing crew that remains now are very experienced. So Nathan Outeridge is a very experienced campaigner, a very level head, a very good leader, and an outstanding helmsman. So we lose nothing with Nathan Outeridge. But that said, on the other side of the boat, on the port helm, and this is no disrespect to Seb Menzies, he is a very talented young sailor, but he's a young sailor. He's 21 years old. He's never sailed in an America's Cup before. He hasn't been exposed to the pressure that will come on if he makes a mistake at a critical time in the America's Cup finals. So those sorts of things you look at and you think, compared to last time where you say you've got Peter Burling on the helm, going for the three-peat, you've got the continuity and talent of Blair Tuchuk sitting there, you're bringing in Nathan Outeridge, so you've got a very experienced, talented crew. You don't have that this time round for Emirates Team New Zealand. You've got experienced people, then you've got a young rookie in Seb Menzies, and you've got a crew that hasn't worked together before in the pressure cooker of the America's Cup finals.
Absolutely, and of course, looking at the potential challenges, it's Lernarossa, then there's a big gap to the rest of them, but I see that we obviously the news of Australia coming back to the America's Cup It's grabbed a bit of excitement across the Tasman. Obviously, they have Tom Slingsby there and Glenn Ashby. He's part of the design team. He's more or less running it. It's a good thing to have Ozzy back in this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's exciting to have them back. No question that they've got the sailing talent. What they don't have is time.
Yeah.
You know, they're not even in the water yet. They don't have an AC40. They've got a year to go till the America's Cup. And you cannot buy time, and talent can only be realized in terms of its potential when you've got enough time to develop it on the boat and to get the best out of yourself. And they don't have the time. So they will know that. They're experienced people, particularly Glenn Ashby, but also Tom Slingsby, as you pointed out. Their view will be a long term. They're in the game now, and this time is really them building for next time. So they may or may not be competitive. They certainly won't be up there with the Lunarossa and the Emirates Team New Zealand. There is daylight between those two teams and the rest of the challengers. But it's great to see Aussie back in, and they'll make good progress, and they'll build a foundation for next time.
Yeah, it looks like they are going to be there very much for the future, and you see how much and the talent they have is basically mostly out of that Australian Sail GP team, Mark. Looking at Sail GP, New Zealand will be back in the water in June in Halifax.
Yeah, so we've got a really interesting sort of contrast or comparison opportunity this weekend, in that the New York Sail GP regatta is on, and of course last week we had Cagliari with the AC40 America's Cup preliminary regatta. And looking at the two products, they are quite similar. Fleet racing with the AC40s, same product with the Sail GP, and then you go through to a sort of match racing final with the America's Cup AC40s, and then a three-boat final for the Sail GP. It's an interesting comparison. Where Sail GP has got the march on the America's Cup is continuity and a regular product where fans, sponsors can follow every few weeks an event that builds momentum. The America's Cup has lost that, and so that AC40 preliminary regatta last weekend was the first time we've seen the America's Cup team sailing in a couple of years against each other. And so, I for me now, arguably, Sail GP is the premier sailing event, professional sailing event in the world. And the America's Cup, you could argue it's fading, or it's certainly going to have to play catch-up. There'll be a lot of interest in the America's Cup next year, don't get me wrong. But in terms of a sailing product, Sail GP, I think, has really stolen it.
You know what? You're right, Mark. When I look at Sail GP and I look at the America's Cup, it's a yearly circuit. It's probably cheaper to have a Sail GP team than America's Cup team. And looking at it from a New Zealand point of view, okay, the Black Foils, they've had a few issues, but they've been there or thereabouts. And I just believe that with America's Cup, I don't know, New Zealanders, because it's probably no longer been hosted in New Zealand, whether the passion is still there is always going to be the big thing. I know in the yachting fraternity, which you're heavily involved in, they'll have that passion. But the beauty about the America's Cup when it was in New Zealand, you could be a yachty from Devonport or a Kaukauki from Dunsandel in the South Island, and everyone was an expert.
Yeah, you just made the understatement of the year that the Black Foils have had a few issues. My gosh, not only...
I'm always good at these, Mark, as you know.
I mean, that I was there watching that in Auckland, and honestly, I thought I was watching somebody potentially lose their life in that collision between
scary.
The French and the Black
Absolutely
Foils.
Scary.
It was pretty scary, and so that's something that'll be a major issue for the Black Foils to overcome, just psychologically, to get back and have the ability to push that boat hard, knowing that when things go wrong, people can get pretty seriously injured. Remembering that the French female sailor is still out, and Lewis Sinclair, the grinder at the front end who got injured, he's still out rest of the season. Now, these are serious injuries. And I know we see that in other sports, you know, motorsport, for example, where there are crashes and there's a risk of fatality and serious injury. But we really haven't seen that in sailing in the dramatic way that we have in SailGP. And so the Black Foils have got a lot on their plate to try and get themselves back into just sailing mode and getting their confidence back. A success now looks like, to me, them just making it through the season without any other major drama and getting their heads back into the game and then resetting for next year.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, I always enjoy our chats, and as the sailing season gets on and some of the big events are coming to New Zealand, we will be talking.
Always happy to help, Eamon.
Cheers, thanks a lot. That was Mark Orams, and we'll head to the next show.
And yes, that was Mark Orams, and it was a great interview by Mark, and it's, we've got a long way to go to Naples 2027, but, you know, there's still a little bit of concern. I know usually Team New Zealand would walk in with confidence. Luna Rosa have got something, a very talented team. Anyway, next up we have the panel. So we'll have Brendan Telfer and John McBeth.
Rye whiskey turns me green. Everyone's begun to shout and get into a scene. People jumping, saying hello, saying what a way to go. Let us see the music show under the summer moonlight. La 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 la, we can go. La 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 la, to tango. La la la, some more limo through the summer moonlight. La 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 la, we can go. La 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 la, to tango. La la la, some more limo through the summer moonlight. Let's get into some moonlight. Night is hot and sea is calm. Walk hand in hand, palm to palm. Boats are waiting, cross the road. It's a Caribbean moonlight. La 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 la, we can go. La 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 la, you tango. La la la, some more limo through the solid moonlight. La 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 la, we can go. La 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 la, you tango. La la la, some more limo through the solid moonlight.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender, and just before we go on to the panel, looking for a place to drink, looking for a place to have some nice food, a nice drink, and before you go to anywhere, if you're in Mount Eden, heading towards Eden Park for a concert, when getting ready to jump off the train when CRL finally has been delivered from the Mungify station, go to the Horse and Trap. They're located at 3 Enfield Street, and I can tell you something, it is your local in Mount Eden. They have daily food and drink special. I have to say, the food there is absolutely superb. And I always enjoy their beer on tap and the fine wines they deliver. And the service, fantastic. And I can tell you something, if you're looking for a function, you can go to the Horse and Trap. They have a superb function room downstairs, which is brilliant. I've been there a number of times for many events. So their number is 09630 3055, or you can email them info@horseandtrap.co.nz. Well, we just heard Golden Horse, a bit of our old Kiwi classic, Through the Southern Moonlight, and we've got some classic broadcasters here. On line one, the many would say the Doyen of New Zealand sports broadcasting, Brendan Telfer. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Amy.
And on line two, to be or not to be, the one and only John McBeth. G'day, John.
Oh, I objected. Telfer being called the Doyen. I mean, what's going on, Telfer? Did you get a send
Eamon
off to a horse and cart to get that sorted?
Well, I was just going to say, we're not going to talk about a certain subject because I started getting calls about, but Brendan, I know that you had your birthday a few weeks ago, 57 years of age, I will have it noted, but yes, and I did see the photos, and it seems like it was a good shindig there, Brendan.
Yeah, it was. I understand that you're dyslexic, so I can understand why you refer to it as a 57th birthday. But, you know, it was very nice. I had a golf day, basically, so I got all my golfing mates, not all of them, but a few of them, and one or two ring-ins, like Montgomery and Quinn, who happened to be around in Auckland town at the time. And so we had a nice night at my golf club, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, I was going to say, I've never been to an 80th birthday. No, I have, actually. Sorry, Brendan, that's a bit silly for me. Anyway, we're going to kick it off, guys. We're going to talk Super Rugby. I'm going to start off with you, Mr. McBeth. Well, obviously, last night's match, I believe potentially that becomes the final. I'm calling it now. I believe that will be the final, but it will be in Wellington. I have a look at it. The Hurricanes made a number of changes, as did the Crusaders. But I will say this, John, one thing we always learnt, you never throw stones in a glass house and you never set off fireworks in a covered stadium. What was your thoughts on last night?
When I saw I switched off at half time, as I always do, and go and do important stuff, I came back out and I thought, how's this myth got in here? And then I, of course, thought, no, that won't be it. But they set off fireworks. So, yeah, that's something I'll learn, I think. The rugby was, I thought, almost one of those games that it was the Hurricanes had everything to lose. They had put out, as you said, a lot of their second-string players, and that makes sense when you've got the bigger games coming up, already assured of top spot and a home quarterfinal. So, it was the result that I actually predicted on another station, that the Crusaders would win this one. I think the Crusaders would have got quite a bit out of that, actually. They got more and more confident as the game wore on. But injury problems all round, though, I think, losing a key prop and then, with Blackadder not available then. All these things happen at this stage of the season. Getting to the pointy end, but I don't think we could read too much into that match last night.
I don't think we could. I know there's a big match for the Blues against the Chiefs, where the Chiefs have made a number of changes, but obviously big concerns for Dave Rennie would be seeing Fletcher Newell go down, and it's another prop going down, so we're really running out of props. Just your thoughts on the game, Brendan.
Well, I'm speaking here as a Wellingtonian, and I disagree with John. I was very disappointed and angry to some degree at what the Hurricanes did. I mean, okay, I get the so-called bigger picture, but I think when you've got 30,000 people who have paid, I imagine, probably $50 a ticket at least to go to that new stadium, and the Hurricanes decide to field a side basically made up of their B team, all of their leading players rested apart from Roygaard, who needed rugby, so he had 40 minutes. I think it was offensive to the spirit of the game. I think it was offensive to those 30,000 people that showed up. And I think there'd be a lot of Hurricane fans around bottom half of the North Island that would be unhappy at what was dished up by the Hurricanes last night. I don't buy this business that they had to rest their players because they've had a tough, hard season. For goodness sake, every team in the competition has played the same number of matches. The only reason the Hurricanes rested their players is because they had an unassailable lead at the top of the points table. I don't think that's a good enough reason. I think it's a selfish reason for what they did. And the match itself, and those 30,000 people that showed up were legitimately expecting this to be a classic encounter between two of the top teams in the competition, and it was one-sided from start to finish, 47-14. And I, as I said, I speak as a Wellingtonian. I played representative rugby for Wellington many years ago, so I don't get any pleasure from being critical of them, but I just don't think that's good enough at this level.
John,
I think the key though, Brendan, is that every one of those 30,000 people would have gone out with smiles on their faces, you know, so I think it was always going to be a jam-packed stadium no matter what the opposition, and they'll have all gone out saying, aren't we good? Crusaders are looking really hot. I'm playing bowls at the moment, and everyone here is saying, weren't the Hurricanes deplorable? So, you know, they didn't win any friends by what they performed with last night. But I think, as you said, you understand the bigger picture. I think that's where we've got to take it.
Yep. I'm just going to say this, and then closing off on that subject, the Hurricanes with their top lineup and through Super Rugby, they are, I believe, they're the finish article in this competition.
They are. They're the best. They are the best team in Super Rugby this year. They have been, and I imagine I would expect them to win it. And they deserve to win it because of the calibre of the rugby they've scored, the number of tries that they've scored. I think it's over six tries a match, isn't it? Which is extraordinary. And I just think they let themselves down a bit there last night by that performance, by not playing some of their key players. You know, the Crusaders could have said the same thing. Oh, look, we're not going to play a lot of our key players because we've got the playoffs coming along. I'll be interested to see what the Chiefs do tonight. They might think, well, you know, the Hurricanes played basically half their B team. We should do the same and keep our players fresh for next week and give this game to the Blues tonight.
Yeah, well, it's looking that way.
Probably a big lesson for the Hurricanes that they would have gone into that game thinking quite confidently that their reserve players, those that haven't played much, would have been capable of at least getting close to the standard that the A team has produced this year. I think they would have felt a bit let down over that performance, and possibly surprised that the margin was that big and that they didn't fire apart from a period in that first half. So, yeah, lessons, as they say, learnings, Brendan, learnings.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I hope so anyway, yeah.
Anyway, let's speak of something more positive. Brendan, the Warriors, they have been absolutely sensational this year. We're not going to say those infamous words about it's our you-know-what, but I've looked at this Warriors side and I've thoroughly enjoyed them. In fact, it's actually been better to watch than Super Rugby as a product, the Warriors have.
Yeah, I would agree with most of what you've said there. It's amazing the popularity. I just think inside the four walls of my house, which I live with my wife, who's not a sporting person at all. She's got no choice really, but to sometimes sit down and have a cup of coffee at 9 o'clock because I'm watching sport. But she's hooked on Warriors. She's so hooked on the Warriors, she calls them all by their Christian names, which mean nothing to me. Well, I know Tanner Boyd, but I mean,
he's out in.
Yeah, well, that's right. But it's an indication of how popular they've become. But I thought their coach, Andrew Webster, summed up everything superbly for me anyway a couple of nights ago in a grab that I saw on the news where he said, hey, he was being asked to sort of try to hype up this big match with the Panthers, the two top teams. And he said, all that's at stake in this match is 2 points. He said, it won't define our season if we lose. It won't define our season if we win. All is at stake is 2 points. And I think he's probably put that into the minds of all of his players for this match tonight or tomorrow, whenever it is. And what a superb piece of, I think, coaching mentality to put it into something as succinct but as sharp as that. And that's probably one of the reasons why they perform so well, because this guy's doing such a great job with them at the helm.
I think that's quite a good point you make, and I didn't hear that quick, but often I think over the last couple of seasons when the Warriors have been going so well, they have stumbled at crucial times, and whether that is because of the pressure that they put on themselves, thinking that this is a game which will define our season, or as Webster said, you know, that's not the case. It is just about, it's another match which could give them 2 points and cement their place at the top of the table. But I think that's very clever, what he's doing, getting into the heads of the players and making sure they don't overstep the mark with their pre-match hype.
Yeah. Indeed.
Absolutely. And when you look at this Warriors side, since his inception in 1995, there's always been hope, and there's always, I look at this Warriors side, it reminds me so much of that 2002 side, but I look at it, they just seem that they've got a really good edge about themselves. They seem confident. They seem like they enjoy playing, and they actually enjoy each other's company, which really makes for a lot. Will make for a successful season, Brendan.
Hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you'll probably find most teams enjoy each other's company if they're winning every week, regardless of what sport it is. But they're good to watch, and it's a different sport from rugby union. I have my quibbles with the fact there's too much refereeing in rugby, and then you turn over at 9:30 and watch an NRL game, and sometimes you're not even aware the referee's on the field. But they're two different sports, and they go down two different paths, and that's good.
And just from your perspective, living in the capital, John, you have a look at the Warriors. They sold out Henry Stadium.
Yeah, they'll sell out wherever they go. Wouldn't matter where they played, in New Zealand and overseas. In Australia, we've seen the massive support they get over there. They've set the standard for support, and I think that was something that Auckland FC wanted to replicate when they played their big final last week, and they succeeded with that. So teams are getting big crowds, and, you know, it was said, therefore, it was encouraging last night to see another full stadium in Christchurch for Super Rugby.
Absolutely. Well, we move on. Brendan, 15-year-old wonder kid in the IPL. Now, you text me yesterday on this, and I looked at that innings, and it was a 15-year-old kid hitting Pat Cummins all over the park. It's fantastic. And, of course, we might as well chat a bit of golf, but this 15-year-old wonder kid, Brendan.
It is. It's an extraordinary story. It hardly got any publicity at all in New Zealand here on media, newspapers or television. He's 15 years of age. Let me just take a deep breath, see if I can get through both his Christian name and his surname. Vlad Sukiavachi is his name. And what he's doing is extraordinary. When I looked at what he's done this year, and he scored 97 a couple of days ago, I was immediately thinking of Don Bradman, which is crazy and it's stupid. And this young kid's place in the annals of cricket history will be determined by what he does as a test cricketer. But it won't be long before he's playing test cricket. I remember Sachin Tendulkar made his test debut at the age of 16 in a test match in Napier, actually, here in New Zealand many years ago. Pakistan also plays a lot of teenagers in at test cricket level. But what this kid is doing is utterly extraordinary. It's Bradman-esque, like what he's doing. He's so far ahead of anyone else in terms of the runs that he scored in the IPL. And the best batsmen in the world, basically, are playing in this competition. The other night, he hit 97 off 29 balls. Now, the fastest 100 in IPL cricket or in T20 cricket is held, not surprisingly, by Chris Gayle, who 18 years ago hit 100 in a IPL match in 30 balls. This kid the other night, when he was on 97, had taken only 28 balls to get to 97. He wasn't aware that this record was on the line, and he flicked the ball down to third man and unfortunately got caught just inside the boundary, and so he had 29 balls for his 97. To put it in another perspective, if a batsman goes to the wicket, the minimum number of balls you have to face to get to 100 is 17. If you hit a 6 off every one of the first 17 balls you faced, get to 102. Well, this kid, against some of the best bowlers in the world, Pat Cummins was playing for the Hyderabad Sunrisers, and his bowling figures, this was Cummings' bowling figures, were four overs, none for 64. And most of those 64 runs came from Suryavanshi, who opened the innings. His run rate was 334, strike rate. So in other words, he was scoring basically 3.5 runs off every ball he faced. For the 28 or 29 he faced when he was at the wicket. It's the third time he's got to 90 this season in the IPL. And his strike rate the other night was 334 for his 28 deliveries he scored runs from. 12 sixes and 5 fours against the best bowlers in the world. And yet doesn't even get a mention in the New Zealand media. Extraordinary.
I heard it on the radio. Brendan, when I was in the car and I heard someone ended up a news sports bulletin by saying, and you mentioned his name, has just scored 97 off 27 balls or whatever it was. And that's outstanding. Ended the sports news. And I was mentally trying to work out. I said, well, tell me how many sixes did he hit? Then he said, that's at least, that's getting close to four runs a ball, and you've left me hanging, and I don't know how. So I was pleased you said he scored 12 sixes and four fours or whatever it was, yeah.
He actually got 92 of his 97 runs came in boundaries.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, remarkable.
And 5 fours is 20, so 92 against some of the best bowlers in the world. Basically, he got 7 runs off every 2 balls he faced. I'm just waiting for him now to get into the test arena because that'll define really what he's like. Yeah,
yeah.
My skip's looking at me wondering when I'm going to get back out into the green.
Well, do you want me to have a word with him? Hey, just very quickly, just some of the golf. Obviously, Aaron Rye winning the Players' Championship. Just some of your feelings, Kiwis in golf. It's been a bit of a quiet week.
It's been pretty good. It has been a quiet week. Quiet again this week. Now, you should have the last say, Aiden, because you said to me before we came on air, you're a bit grumpy about is it the news coverage or television coverage of motor racing here?
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to this because I think I know that you two will both gang up. It wouldn't surprise me if you both had a word. We'll get this little so and so and sort him out. But I'm going to say this right now. I'm going to be honest to the point, and I'm not talking just Liam Lawson. I'm talking Marcus Armstrong. Came very close to being on the podium at the Indy 500, one of the biggest motorsports races in the world. How much coverage? A zero. Virtually a little bit of a segment, a bit like that segment about that young 15-year-old kid. Now, I think at times, some of our motorsporting people, not all of them, some of them don't get the credit from the New Zealand media they deserve. Now, Marcus Armstrong was one. Hold on. You've got Mitch Evans in the Formula E, which is division there. He's doing very well. We have a lot of very, very good young motorsports people in that are competing overseas. And we get stuff. All there isn't a proper New Zealand motorsporting race show that you can say you can watch it on Sky. Well, I haven't seen that yet since TV3 canned the CRT motorsports show held by.
Are you ever going to stop, Brendan?
Yep, and
give us a go.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, okay. Well, suppose it is my show. I'm allowed to talk, McBeth. But here we go. Both of you go for your retort. You can both, give me a very, very hard time, which I can tell that Mr. Telfer is looking forward to.
I imagine what you're saying is probably correct, but I don't feel I am entitled to or have the credentials to commentate on motor racing coverage because it took me 3 attempts to get my license when I was 16. How much do I know about motor racing?
Here we go. Come on, Macbeth. You wanted to give me...
Oh, no. I mean, the names you've mentioned, I only know because I hear them in the media. So, I think there's quite a bit of coverage. And I think if we, there'll be sports out there who will be banging their heads against the wall saying, God, if motor racing is getting poor coverage, what about us? We never get heard. And there are so many sports that get very little coverage. Sports media has changed quite a bit, I think, over the years, and that they are restricted almost because of of what they've got available, it ends up being what's coming in from rugby, rugby league, netball, cricket, and I always say golf and motor racing are, you know, they're probably in the top 10 sports being covered nationally in New Zealand. So I don't think motor racing can feel hard done by at all.
Mm. I'm going to say, you go, Brendan.
I'll say this much. I am bitterly disappointed with the quality of the sports news that we get on television each night, particularly from Television One. They seem obsessed every single night with a series of previews. They preview women's provincial rugby. They preview rugby matches 5 or 6 days out before the matches take place. And previews, as you and I know, John, are very simple things to put together. You get a bit of archive footage. You send a cameraman out to the training run to get a grab with one or two players, and there's your story. And they just are not doing what I think they should be doing. Sports news on television at 6:30 or 6:40 is a result service. It's not a show to preview what's coming up over the next 4 or 5 days, but they're obsessed with these previews. And TV3, that don't have anywhere near this kind of resources that TVNZ does, are at least coming up with some enterprising and interesting sort of angles.
I agree. And I think you mentioned the word, you know, sports news. I think they just need to take out the word news from the headline, because it is not news at all, most of what you see. So anyway, I've got to go and deliver my bowls. I better go.
Yeah, okay. You go, Mr. Macbeth. Now you're weighing Mr. Telfer up. Anyway, Brenda, just saying this right now, I was just going to say to you just one thing. You know, if we ever got, hypothetically, we ever got a top cyclist who, let's say, was in contention for the Tour de France, would that be back page news in a newspaper? Would it be a headline story in the sports? Probably no.
Well, no. If we had a sportsman who was winning or won the Tour de France, it would be front page news. I doubt about that. It would prevail over all of these sort of kind of mundane previews that they dish up every night in the sports news. But I don't have an issue with that. But and motor racing. I watched, because of Liam Wilson, I watch a bit of motor racing, actually, and I watched the Canadian Grand Prix the other day, and I saw someone complaining about the fact that there was very little kind of mention by the television commentators, of Liam Lawson. But the fact of the matter is, you turn your television set onto that channel and you immediately know where Liam Lawson is, because down the left-hand side of the page, they have that permanent kind of graphic of where everyone is, the 20 drivers or whatever the number is in the field. So I know all the time where Liam Lawson was in that race. And he did pop up now and again in Vision, but he was 7. So clearly the story of that Grand Prix was what was going on at the front of the race between, you know, the likes of Hamilton and Russell and the young guy, what's his name, Benelli. And I thought the television coverage was excellent. They didn't completely ignore Lawson, but the fact of the matter is he was 7th, and that was a good effort from Lawson, because I think he started in 13th or 15th or somewhere. But, you know, it's a worldwide coverage that they're providing.
Anyway, we just got 1 minute left, Brendan. Your thoughts on Auckland FC's victory in the A-League?
Fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
Well, I sent you a text. Your late friend Sam Malcolmson would have loved it.
Oh, yeah, I thought of Sam quite often, actually. I went to many football matches with Sam at Eden Park to watch the Phoenix when they had their annual match in Auckland, and he would have absolutely loved every moment of that. And it's a great story. It's will be one of the great sporting stories of the year. And you know, when you look at the checkered history of football in this city playing in Australian leagues, to come through and do that in such a quick period of time, 2 years from nothing to the champions, it'll take a lot of beating. And it's a good example, I suppose, how the profile of sport in this country is changing. You've got the Warriors and you've got the AFC dominating the city, pulling huge crowds, much bigger crowds than the Blues.
Absolutely. On that note, Brendan, have a great weekend. It was always great having a chat, mate.
Okay. Thank you, Alan.
Cheers, mate. Bye. And that's our start.